Evan Dando is here to perform an acoustic live mini-concert and also to talk with the Café's Michaela Majoun about past and present Lemonheads history, which includes the band's moment at the Top of the Pops with their cover of Simon & Garfunkel's Mrs. Robinson.
And it's to you, Mrs. Robinson, Jesus loves you more than you will know. Whoa, whoa, whoa. God bless you, please, Mrs. Robinson. Heaven holds a place for those who pray. Hey, hey, hey. Hey, hey, hey. We'd like to know a little bit about you for our files. We'd like to help you learn to help yourself. Look around you, all you see are sympathetic guys. Stroll around the grounds until you feel at home. And here's to you, Mrs. Robinson. Jesus loves you more than you will know.
The new Lemonheads reunites the original trio with some help from Jay Maskus of Dinosaur Jr., and it's a pretty fine album. Before we get to an acoustic set from Evan Dando, he talks with Michaela Majoun, who takes us back to the beginning and finds out where Evan grew up.
No, well, yeah, I guess it's kind of more like country, Essex, Massachusetts. I guess maybe it's a suburb, but it's really country-ish.
You're from Essex?
Yeah.
I'm from Swampscott.
Oh, wow, yeah. I mean, it's really country-ish up there. I always thought it was, there's farms all over the place and stuff, so it wasn't really that suburban. But I lived in Essex till I was 9, and then in 76 we moved to Boston, right in downtown, so that was perfect. But when you're 9, you kind of want to be in a city, and so there's more things to discover, and I'd already gotten into skateboarding by then, so just took off, and it was great. Boston in the 70s was a nice place. The 80s weren't very easy. They were not good for Boston, I don't think.
Not good for Boston or not good for you?
They were particularly bad for Boston in the 80s, I think. Boston, because it just was a different city after the 80s. Then again, the late 80s, the mid to late, 86, the Pixies and us and throwing music, there are all these great bands happening, and so there was a good music scene. So I was there for that. That was fun.
You don't have any accent.
No,
how is that possible? Because I know there's an accent in Essex, and definitely in Boston.
Yeah, well, it must just be from my parents sort of dissuaded me from speaking in the native tongue, I think. That, you know, I had one when I was a kid. You know, I said something like, "I don't like Dean no more," and I spoke like a normal person from that part of the world. And my parents chided me and told me to speak like the newscasters on television. They didn't say that, but that's what ends. You know, everything's all homogenized these days.
That's so funny because I think the same thing happened to me. Mm-hmm. Nobody told me to do it, but I think I just mimicked it.
Yep.
So it was quite a transition, I'm sure. From growing up in Essex, then you moved to the big city, and you met the other members of the Lemonheads in school?
In high school, yeah. We started in 85, me and the other main guy, Ben Diley, we started playing, doing four-track recordings in the basement in about 85. I mean, 83 was the big year where I got into hardcore punk rock, and went to see bands like SSD Control and Black Flag and Flipper and tons of bands. And the year before that, I'd renounced rock and roll and just listened to jazz and classical. So it took something as exciting as hardcore punk rock to get me back into it.
Why did you renounce rock?
I don't know. I started getting into McCoy Tyner, Charlie Parker, and just to name two, Sonny Rollins, Clifford Brown, Max Roach, and Bill Evans, and I thought it was superior form of music for the idealism of youth. And I stopped. I put away my Black Sabbath records and stuff for a whole year. And but then when I heard Black Flag and Minor Threat, I started reconsidering it.
New energy in the music.
Yeah.
So when you got together with those guys, did you ever consider that you would be I'm going to say a teen idol, but an idol for teens is more precise.
Right. No, there was never really any careerist motivation behind the band. We just thought it was fun, and we wanted to. The main motivation for keeping it going was when we got offered a tour of Europe and England, and I had always traveled because my parents were really they surfed, so we used to go to Biarritz every other summer for a long time in France, and so I had a taste for traveling, and I thought, right, if this music stuff is going to allow me to travel and all over the world, then I really, really want to do it, and that was one of the motivating factors of keeping it going.
And the tour was offered before you had recorded, or
no, not in Europe, that was after our third record came out, and our first tour of Europe was in '89.
Wow. But even though the albums were really great, the thing that catapulted you into superstardom was it a fluke? I mean, how did you decide to put that cover?
We didn't
Mrs.
decide.
Robinson?
We were doing it just because we liked the movie a lot. And funnily enough, we sampled the movie on Allison Starting to Happen. You can hear at the end of it, during a drum roll, you can hear where Elaine Robinson goes, she yells Ben really loud, you know, and we had sampled The Graduate, and we were all worried about that, and sure enough, we got offered to do this for a fee, you know. We just recorded it in 3 hours in East Berlin. We were on tour, and it came out so fresh sounding, I guess, that the label liked it so much, and they sort of said, yeah, well, we're going to have to put it out there, and put it on the album, also because the album was only like 29 minutes long, and so that they had another argument there. And the lucky thing was that people liked the rest of our music. When they went and bought the album, they found a whole another side, you know, our real sound people tended to like. So we got lucky. It happens with a lot of bands. You got to remember the Stones' first top 10 hit was written by Lennon McCartney, I Want to Be Your Man. So it happens with a lot of bands.
So you know your music history,
yeah,
popular music,
yes,
a lot,
yep,
from being interested in it and being part of
obsessed
that scene.
Obsessed with it, yeah.
Obsessed?
Oh, definitely obsessed with it, yeah.
Are you obsessed with the music that's coming out today, too?
Definitely not, no.
I'm Why?
Not. I'm just not. It's mathematically impossible for it to be as important as all of what's come before it. So I'm still learning about new things like Bert Jansch and things like Pentangle and different jazz things and or different classical things I haven't discovered yet, or country stuff from the 20s and 30s. So I just keep delving further into the past, really.
Who has most influenced your songwriting? You're really a good songwriter. I mean, it's interesting that there's this punk side, and then the pop side seems to come so easily to you.
Yeah, I think I just always like good songs, and I always Heatwave, Martha and the Vandellas, Motown. I mean, I think when I was little, that's what hit me the hardest was like that song Heatwave, and Marvin Gaye and Eddie Kendrick's first solo album, and mostly soul music really was what got me so excited about music, about popular music, because that's mostly what my parents listened to, Sly and the Family Stone and Al Green and stuff like that. And so I found myself with an opportunity to do it, and I just jumped at the chance because I felt like I at least could sing well, and I was just going to work on it until I got it right. And meanwhile, I have a lot of fun while we're touring, and just it all kind of fell together, strangely enough. I never really wanted it. Not that bad, you know.
Your parents sound very hip.
They're great. Yeah, they're great. They were surfers. Yeah, yep.
But getting back to the songwriting for a minute, I mean, it's no easy thing, because I've tried it. It's no easy thing to have an idea and express it in a way that has depth and yet has a certain kind of simplicity.
Right.
And you're a master of melody, and you write things that are great for your own voice. All that's not easy.
No, the key, I think, is to write something that kind of sounds like something you've heard before, but you can't pin it down exactly. I think that's what I've noticed. Some of my successful songs that I've written have the quality of, where have I heard this before? Because it all comes from a common source, I think, maybe somehow. Sort of comes from, you know, well, I always started off writing songs from guitar and just like making up figures and riffs on the guitar, and then the words come next, and that's what I've always done and I continue to do. And until I get a piano, I guess that's what I'll be doing. I really want to get a piano for our apartment.
Have you studied piano?
No, but I can play a little bit. I love playing piano, right?
Evan Dando is our guest today on the World Cafe, and he's just resurrected the Lemonheads name for a brand new CD, first one under that name in 10 years. Do you still live in Boston?
No, I moved away from Boston kind of in 1990 because we went on tour for almost 3 years and made an album. And so I there was a rotating apartment that I'd occasionally go back to, but had no apartment from a certain time in 92. Till 94, and after that I just lived at the Gramercy Park Hotel for a year, and then moved to New York proper.
Did you? How will I say this? Did you have trouble dealing with how successful the band became?
Maybe I thought it was maybe a little bit too easy, and where's the catch, you know, sort of thing. I think I might have sabotaged it a little bit. I mean, I wasn't. I had always in the back of my mind what happens when bands sell 10 million records out of the box. It's just always their music suffers or their personal life suffers. And so I might have been guarding myself against that by doing strange records and just this and that. But I always just wanted to be able to support myself with music, and that's all. You know, I never had any grand dreams of being, you know, I never had that much ambition, really.
Were you ever sorry that you disbanded the Lemonheads in the form they were in then?
No, it was a perfect thing to do. I mean, we'd been working so hard, and I didn't really, you know, I just said this is our last show once, and it was the last show for a long time. But I never really disbanded when we put out the best of. I made sure to call it the Atlantic years, leaving room for, you know, the vagrant years, you know, to come.
That's a good idea.
I always had it in my back of my mind. I would have another Lemonheads record out eventually.
And here it is.
Yep.
There is an elephant in the room, as they say in this discussion, which is drugs, I guess. And I know that you went through a period that was really difficult, and I assume that you're out of it.
Yeah.
I mean, out the other
end.
I just don't talk about it.
Yeah. I just don't talk about it.
Let's talk a little bit about the songs that you do in the performance.
Oh, okay.
Because you only chose one from the new album.
Yeah. I was asleep 10 minutes before I went on stage, so I looked. I have a little set list on top of my acoustic guitar, and I just sort of put a cross next to the ones that I might do, and I just sort of did some pretty well known Lemonhead songs, and. And I threw one new one in.
Talk about the new one, No Backbone.
That's a song that's written by Tom Morgan, one of my songwriting partner, Tom Morgan, and that's one of the ones that he wrote. And I one of my favorite songs that he's ever written. I've always wanted to do it, and I finally got around to doing it.
Evan, it's been great to see you. Thank you so much, and it's wonderful to have the Lemonheads back and the new CD, The Lemonheads.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
And now we're going to go to the stage at World Cafe Live for some songs.
Set foot inside a tent. Couldn't build a fire to save my life. I lied about being the outdoor type. I never slept out underneath the stars. The closest that I came to that was one time my car broke down for an hour in the suburbs at night. I lied about being the outdoor type. Too scared to let you know you knew what you were looking for. I lied until I fit the bill. God bless the great indoors. I lied about being
the outdoor type. I never owned a sleeping bag, let alone a mountain bike. I can't go away with you on a rock climbing weekend. What if something's on TV and it's never shown again? It's just as well I'm not invited. I'm afraid of heights. I lied about being the outdoor type. I never learned to swim. I can't grow a beard or even fight. I lied about being the outdoor type. It's a little early to sing. Thank you. If I was in the fridge, would you open the door? If I was the grass, would you mow your lawn? If I was your body, would you still wear clothes? If I was a booger, would you blow your nose? Where would you keep it? Would you eat it? I'm just trying to give myself a reason for being around. If I was a front porch swing, would you let me hang? If I was a dance floor, would you shake your thing? If I was a rubber check, would you let me bounce up and down inside your bank account? Would you trust me not to break you? I'm just trying really hard to make you notice me being around. If I was a haircut, would you wear a hat? If I was a maid, could I clean your flat? If I was the carpet, would you wipe your feet in time to save me from mud off the street? If you like me, if you love me, would you get down your knees and scrub me? I'm a little grubby just being around. It's a new song. It's dawned on me again, I can't balance in betweens. It's no longer familiar to me. It's become routine. The bedroom ritual, a simple way to feel without running the risk of anything real ever being given, ever being shown. Back in the bedroom, no backbone. Standards I kept in the back of my mind, and now just rules to break from time to time. Way past worrying about it getting a hold on me, I realize I ride on its back for free. The bedroom ritual, a simple way to feel without running the risk of anything real ever being given, ever being shown. Back in the bedroom, no backbone. Addictively, I stick to the safety of the script, but I know I'll end
end up settling for less than perfect fit. The bedroom ritual, a simple way to feel without running the risk of anything real ever being given, ever being shown. Back in the bedroom, no backbone. Back in the bedroom, no backbone. Back in the bedroom, no should have sort of would have loved her if you could have. The story's getting closer to the end. He kind of should have sort of would have loved her if you could have. He'd rather be alone than pretend. She just wanted him to love her, but he didn't. He took to the woods and wandered in it. Walked along and on until he couldn't. Stole himself to tell her that he wouldn't. He kinda should've sorta would've loved her if he could've. The story's getting closer to the end. He kinda should've sorta would've loved her if he could've. He'd rather be alone than pretend. I see that we're coming to the end of the affair. Well, there's one final favor to ask of you, my dear. Which can we pretend that it was you on the receiving end and tell our friends that it was my idea?
Thanks.
Confetti from Evan Dando, live on stage with an acoustic set, and our thanks to Evan for joining us. That new Lemonheads album is just called The Lemonheads, and it's out on Vagrant Records. If you're looking for it, it is at our World Cafe CD store at worldcafe.npr.org.